Rishvaiva Mari Gopina
Rishvaiva Mari Gopina
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Uravak Paramapritas
Uravak Paramapritas
Tanamasya Nidang Jagau Rishvaiva Mari Gopina
Rishvaiva Mari Gopina
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Uravak Paramapritas
Uravak Paramapritas
Tanamasya Nidang Jagau
Tanamasya Nidang Jagau
Rishvaiva Mari Gopina
Rishvaiva Mari Gopina
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Uravak Paramapitas
Uravak Paramapitas
Tadnamasyan Nidam Jagau
Tadnamasyan Nidam Jagau
Drishvaiva
Madi Gopinan
Krishna
Veshatma Viklavam Vishvaiva Mari Gopina
Krishna
Veshatma Viklavam Uravak Paramapritas Dhanamasya Nidam Jagau Vishvaiva Mari Gopina Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Udava Paramapritas
Udava Paramapritas
Tanamasya Nidam Jagau
Tanamasya Nidam Jagau
Drishtaiva Madi Gopinam
Drishtaiva Madi Gopinam
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Udava Paramapritas
Udava Paramapritas
Vishvaiva Mari Gopina
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Uravak Paramapritas Tanamasya Nidam Jagau Vishvaiva Mari Gopina
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Uravak Paramapritas
Tanamasya Nidam Jagau
Very good. Any other ladies?
Vishvaiva
Hari Gopinam
Krishna Veshatma Viklavam
Uravak Paramapritas Tanamasya Nidam Jagau. If you have mobiles, I guess that's what that not so transcendental sound was just now. Please, I don't know if they have some system of putting them onto some kind of mode or what, I don't know. But try not to allow them to make their noise in the temple room at all, actually, if possible. I had to turn them off. It disturbed. Last night we were hearing how in the forest of Naimisharanya, 5,000 of years ago, how when the sages were gathered with Suta Goswami to hear the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, all Vedic subject matters, but when they finally came to Srimad Bhagavatam to hear the actual solution to the problems of this age of Kali, which was to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Suta Goswami repeated, he perfectly repeated what he'd heard, of course from different sources, but specifically from Shukadeva Goswami, because he was He heard perfectly from Shukadev Goswami. He heard with rapt attention. And all the sages there, he requested them all to kindly hear this. As I have heard it, I will try to explain it to you. Please hear with rapt attention. That rapt attention, they had means to say, they had no other thought on their minds. They were completely absorbed in hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Their minds were completely focused, which is probably not the case with us. Our minds may not be so completely focused. But not only that, but the whole atmosphere of Naimisharanya, and some of you may have been, who's been to Naimisharanya? Anyone been? No, not yet. Try to go if you're in that part of the world. It's near Lucknow. It's a wonderful place. It's a very sublime atmosphere there. When I went, that was last year now, walking alone into the forest. There's lots of trees there, it's not an area where there's a lot of trees. It's in the Ganga, in the plains, the Ganges plains. And mostly it's agriculture. But that area, Naimisharanya, the forest of Naimisha, the forest where the wheel of Lord Brahma landed on the earth planet. And in that forest, mostly it's there's little places here and there which, here's the place where Suta Goswami spoke, and here's the place where Vyasadeva sat, and all these different things are there. Ramachandra had some pastimes there, and so on and so forth. And the place where the wheel actually landed, the Chakratirtha, with that said to be a bottomless lake, small lake, it's not even wider than this room. It's round, and it's said to have no bottom to it. It goes right to the bottom of the universe, so they say. No one's ever reached the bottom so far, as far as I know. But the most wonderful thing I experienced there was, those were very nice, the association of devotees, of course. But also the one day we went walking alone into the forest, came across this amazing place. Wasn't too far away from the village, in the forest there, where there were no roads, no houses, no cars, no people, nothing. Everything was, it seemed really silent. There was the greenest grass I've ever seen in India. I've never seen grass like that in India, except for in some fancy hotel or something. Maybe the MVT in Vrindavan. But otherwise, I've never seen anything like that before. And this natural grass, there were a couple of cows grazing, and everything was quite, all these beautiful trees kind of around this little valley, and it was very wonderful. I just sat there and could almost imagine, I suppose you could say, the scene, taking it back 5,000 years ago, all the sages assembled there, listening with rapt attention to Srimad Bhagavatam from Suta Goswami. And we were thinking that, last night we mentioned it, that nowadays we have microphones, otherwise even with a microphone we can't hear, and even if there's only a small room or a small temple, we have to have a microphone, and then others may have to have some kind of thing in their ears, all sorts of different gadgets to try to record it. They had no tape recorders in those days. Suta Goswami did not take a tape recorder to the banks of the Ganga to record Parikshit Maharaj's statements. He remembered them perfectly well. He didn't need any of these things, none of these gadgets whatsoever. But their minds were pure, they were clear-headed, and the atmosphere was also very, very pure. There were I don't think there were any televisions, and certainly no laptops and no cell phones, all disturbing the ether, all the waves, the whatever they called, in the ether there, all these sound vibrations and all the different vibrations in the ether, which disturb the ether and disturb the mind and disturb our receptivity of transcendental sound. Well, not just transcendental, any sound vibration is perverted and disturbed by all these other interferences. So much interference in the atmosphere, so many unpleasant things, noises and ethereal disturbances, which make it very, very difficult for pure sound vibration to move. Without impediment or without being distorted. So many distortions in this age of Kali, both within our own minds and around us. But that wasn't the case in Naimisharanya when they were assembled there, that Śrīla Gosvāmī, he was a pure devotee. He'd heard perfectly, he remembered perfectly, had perfect memory. And the sages who assembled there, they were also, with rapt attention, they were also firmly fixed and submissive to Śrīla Gosvāmī to hear exactly what he had to say. And he wasn't that he was sat there or stood there screaming his head off so that they could all hear him. Because there were more than, there may be 50 of us here today, I don't know how many, whatever it is, 40 or 50, something, maybe not even that. Let's see, there's 7, 11, 15, 17, 20, 25, 30, not even 40, 38 or something like that. So even then we have to talk, we may have to shout sometimes. But there was more than 38 sages gathered in Aum Shrine. Now there are 88,000 of them. And they all heard perfectly well. And as we said last night, they were not that they were all piled on top of each other. They were spread out comfortably over a vast area. And even the ones at the back, well, I presume, they were hearing nicely. Yes. I don't think they were sleeping. And they were hearing and understood that they all heard perfectly well. The birds stopped singing, the trees stopped rustling, the wind stopped blowing. Everything became motionless. You could hear a pin drop. A pin drop in that place. And he wasn't shouting his head off, "Can you hear me at the back?" No. He was just speaking as he spoke. But the sound vibration had no impediment. It just traveled. And because the mind was open, it just entered into the ears and filled the heart. So this is pure hearing and chanting. Pure hearing and chanting. That's the first conception. That's the result was that everybody realized the absolute truth. They understood the message of Bhagavatam. And this is the secret Prabhupada describes this. It's if one hears with rapt attention the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, one will see Krishna on the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. But unfortunately in Kali Yuga, we're not able to hear with rapt attention. This is also based on the fact that our lifestyle is very, very not conducive. Not conducive for Shabda Brahman, for hearing transcendental sound vibration. It's geared towards hearing mundane sounds, Gramyakata. Very much we're tuned in to Gramyakata from the day we're born in this body. And we love to hear mundane sound vibrations, which neither satisfy the soul, neither are they lasting, of course. But nonetheless, we're conditioned like this. And transcendental sound vibration, oftentimes, when someone says, there's some talking going on, probably, let's talk, I'd like to talk something about, you know, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Lord Krishna or something. And then, oh no, I'm too busy, and off we go. We don't want to submit ourselves. We're not very submissive to hearing Krishna Katha. Tendency is not so. So we don't have so much of an attraction. So Prabhupada writes that in order to hear with rapt attention, one has to be pure in mind. In order to be pure in mind, one has to be pure in one's eating, sleeping, mating, defending all one's particular activities. But this is the secret. So the process is to gradually arrange society in such a way as to facilitate the gradual purification of our senses and mind so that we can actually hear the Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada several times as mentioned is actually to arrange a facility where people can come and hear Krishna Katha. Hear about Krishna. Where's Krishna Katha? Is he here this morning? No? He's not here this morning? Oh, he's cooking this morning. Very good, man. So we should all hear Krishna Katha. Is he going to come and speak something? Or Bhagavat Katha. Where's Bhagavat Katha? Pardon? He's on the altar? Where? I don't see him. I don't see him on the altar. I see Krishna there. I think I do. I don't know. They call him by the name of Krishna. Okay, well, they're very busily engaged in. Hey, not on the altar, please. There's the altar.
Hello? No.
You know, just as we said that, someone almost went on the auto. Ironic. Hare Krishna. This is nothing unusual. So, Krishna Katha is the purpose of this movement, to facilitate, make a facility for people to come and hear Krishna Katha. So we're reading today, I think, text 57 of chapter 10. Drishtva. Is that right? Pardon? Drishtva. Seeing. Evam. Such. Adi. And more. Gopinam. Of the gopis. Krishna Avesha. Their total absorption in thought of Krishna. Atma. Consisting of. Viklavam. The mental agitation. Udavaha. Udava. Parama. Supremely. Pritaha. Pleased. Taha. To them. Namasyan. Offering all respect. Idam. This. Jagau. Sang. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. No, it's not by Prabhupada. This is by Sri Dayananda Maharaj and other devotees, followers of Srila Prabhupada. Thus, seeing how the gopis were always disturbed because of their total absorption in Krishna, Uddhava was supremely pleased. Desiring to offer them all respect, he sang as follows. Purport, Viklava means mental disturbance. It should not be confused here with ordinary material desires, ordinary material distress. It is clearly stated that Uddhava was supremely pleased, and he felt this way because he saw that the gopis had attained the highest state of loving ecstasy. Uddhava was an exalted member of the court in Dwarka, an important minister in world political affairs, and yet he felt the spiritual urge to offer his obeisances to the glorious gopis, although externally they were mere cowherd girls in an insignificant village called Vrindavan. Thus, to explain his feelings, he sang the following verses. Srila Jiva Goswami states that Uddhava sang these verses daily while he was in Vrindavan. Nice verses. If you're going to Vrindavan, you can read these before going. There's verses sung by Uddhava in his respect and his worship of the gopis. I don't know, it may not be possible here, but in many temples, you know, they have a little cord, a little wire or something, a little chain across the front of the altar. It's a common factor amongst Indian people, Hindus, that they just walk onto the altar. There are many temples where they're quite right to do that, especially Fijian temples. They just walk onto the altar. No big deal. They go right up to the deities and touch them and all sorts of things. So it would be a good idea. I mean, maybe it doesn't happen here very often, I don't know, but sometimes it happens. It may not be possible, but anyway, something, or some notice should be, or something. It's not people's fault, they don't know. They're just doing what they normally do in other temples, so we don't want to make it sort of like people get upset or anything. So in this interesting verse here, how the gopis were always disturbed. Most people come to Krishna consciousness, they come to try to get free of disturbances. We have this idea, at least, that we like to get free of disturbance. And a lot of people who come, a lot of devotees, probably attest to that, that when they first came, they were very distressed. Of course, they may still be very distressed, but we hope not as much as they were when they came. But oftentimes when we come to Krishna consciousness, we're coming to One of the four reasons why people approach Krishna is to relieve them of distress. Many times people have this distress, they're coming hoping that Krishna consciousness will relieve them of distress. It is one of the actual characteristics of pure devotional service, kleshagni, to release one of material distress. But not exactly necessarily in exactly the same way people may think. Most people think relief of distress means to relieve one of, you know, your mental anxiety, or relieve one of one's problem with debts, or problem with ill health, or some other similar type of problem which one may be facing in this world today. So it's understandable, it's nice, it's pious. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udavidi. But whether we are full of material desires, whatever we are, we should approach Krishna. But the real meaning of kleshagni is not to remove just that, which may occur, but it's to remove the cause. Most people only want to be relieved of the effect. They don't want to be relieved of the cause. The cause of distress is what really has to be dealt with. And devotional service is primarily dealing with the cause. The effects are adjusted by various activities and so on, but you may still feel some effectual suffering. Like Prabhupada says, the fan is not yet stopped, it's slowing down maybe, but it's still going, it's still running. And as long as we, but the main thing is, unless we deal with the causes, it may still keep going. Krishna consciousness is to get to the cause of our distress is of various kinds of causes of the misery. Three primary causes are our activities itself, the dwelling on those material desires, material thoughts, and ignorance itself, ignorance of various kinds. These three factors cause material activities, karmic activities, and thinking or dwelling on sense gratification, desires, and ignorance itself. And there are others too, of course, which were mentioned, false ego and various other things. And other things, obviously, they fall within that, the idea of association and so on and so forth. They're all within those brackets, the three basic areas which we have to deal with. So in Krishna consciousness, of course, this disturbance of the gopis is very different. Their disturbance is just madly attaching them to Krishna. That's another kind of disturbance. The other type of disturbance takes us away from Krishna. So a disturbance that brings us closer to Krishna is not a bad thing. Don't shun it. Don't shy away from it. Sometimes there are some challenges, sometimes even disturbances in our endeavors to become Krishna conscious or spread Krishna consciousness. They're not always a bad thing. It may be a very good thing. It may be, you know, sometimes you're shaking something up, getting rid of the long-standing kind of anartas or unwanted things, and a little bit of disturbance may be felt sometimes when they start to shake up our deep, deep-rooted attachments and our deep-rooted concepts, etc. So a little bit of disturbance is sometimes required sometimes in order to get them out of our consciousness. But besides that, this disturbance in our endeavors to become Krishna conscious, or in the process, just like now in Kazakhstan, of course, most of you are aware of what's going on there. The government is just, what can you say, they just appear to be completely demoniac, and there's not much you can say about that. It's really up to Krishna and whatever he allows to happen now. But they've gone in such a way, it's a great disturbance, you could say, for the devotees. It's a great disturbance even for the people, because their opportunity to receive Krishna consciousness, you may say, appears on the surface to be somewhat thwarted. But at the same time, there must be another plan going on. But from the devotee's point of view, such a disturbance is no doubt a struggle, a strain, anxiety. But the anxiety is for Krishna. It's not because their sense gratification is being interfered with. Material anxiety is due to an interference of sense gratification. This type of anxiety is different. This is anxiety because it's an anxiety for service to Krishna, and devotees are feeling anxiety over the service to Krishna being impeded, or their own incapacity or inability to serve Krishna, and they feel humbled or disturbed sometimes in this state of mind. But that type of disturbances can be very purifying and very strengthening for the devotee, because in that disturbed condition they have no choice but to turn to Krishna. We realize we have no way that on our own that we can deal with this. It's sometimes out of our control, which one tries one's best, but ultimately one, it turns one. Krishna, like Draupadi, she tried her best to protect herself from Dushyant and Karna, but ultimately she could do nothing. She just had to surrender to Krishna. So as Krishna puts us in these situations, because that's the goal of our Krishna consciousness life. The goal is not to open a temple here, open a temple there, do this, do that, you know, even distribute books, etc. All these things are no doubt are important. But the real purpose is to actually come to that point of Sharanagati, of becoming completely dependent upon Krishna and not anything else. Spiritual master's business is to teach us how to be dependent upon Krishna in every situation. The gopis are a personification of total dependence upon Krishna. They're in complete anxiety, but their anxiety or distress is simply due to their absorption in Krishna, worrying about Krishna, worrying about their relationship with Krishna, etc., etc., whatever it may be. But in this world, our anxiety, our disturbance is usually caused by something else. It's usually caused perhaps by our material sense gratification being thwarted, or our idea as to what we came to Krishna consciousness movement for is not exactly what we not been the proper reason, and we may not be getting quite what we wanted. I remember one time one man, he came to the temple in London in Soho Street, and he was seemed to become very interested in Krishna consciousness, and he was a married man, a businessman. And after a while he didn't come anymore. For 1 year he never came. He was chanting 16 rounds and he looked like he was very, very sincere. And then for 1 year he never came. And then he suddenly came back again. And the devotee, who was like cultivating him, I suppose you'd say, asked him what happened. He said, "Well, you know, I've had such a terrible time in the last year. I can't believe it. I came to Krishna consciousness movement." One devotee was telling me something like this last night, I'll mention that too. He said, "I came to this Krishna consciousness movement and I don't know what happened, but everything's gone wrong. Everything that I can think of has gone wrong. Except for I'm still alive, I suppose. Other than that, I wouldn't be able to think if I wasn't alive. And somehow or another, everything's gone wrong. My wife left me. I got the sack. I got a terrible sickness. I got a legal case piled up on me. All my friends left me. I went bankrupt." This all happened within a period of about 3 weeks. And just out of the blue, bang. I said, "That's really strange." And he said, "Yeah, it all started," it said, "when I was in the temple one day and I went before Krishna. And I said, 'Krishna, I want to become a pure devotee. Please take away whatever is an impediment to my being a pure devotee.'" He must have been very sincere in his prayer. Somehow he lost everything within 3 or 4 weeks. But he wasn't quite ready for it. So be careful. If your inside is not quite the same as the outside and you start praying like this, "Krishna, I surrender everything to you. I'm yours." You have to mean it. Just say it and be ready for what it means. You know, Krishna takes away. Prabhupada would always quote that verse. What's that verse? He would quote. Also, many times we see Prabhupada had so many, you can say, anxieties. Many anxieties in both spreading Krishna consciousness and in his own life. So many disturbances, maybe, you know, his family and his business and so many things which just didn't seem to work out. One time his factory was robbed and, you know, servants made off with his capital, and so many things took place. Other businessmen cheated him, and so many things. In every level, every step, Prabhupada, you can say, had to face disturbance. But he never gave up. His focus was always there on the instruction of his spiritual master. He never gave that up, his instruction of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Mahārāja. I'm convinced by the words of Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakur that the only goal of my life is to fulfill or follow the instruction of my spiritual master, whether I'm happy or not, doesn't matter to me. All his instruction, it really counts. This keeps one steady in the midst of causes of disturbance in this world. There are no end of causes of disturbance in this world. You just have to walk out on the street and you're immediately faced with them. And even if you don't, your mind is also another kind of a universe in of itself, which creates so many different disturbances, morning to night, practically speaking. But sometimes Krishna takes away. What's that verse that Krishna, when he's very specially mercifully disposed towards his devotee, he takes away those things which are actually impediments or causes of disturbance or distress or blockages in their Krishna consciousness. Even though his devotee may not want the Lord, still nonetheless he's in a way which is, effective, take away. So Prabhupada also saw that, that Krishna took away all those things which were an impediment to his path, which normally people would say would be a great disturbance. So when people come to Krishna consciousness, they don't usually realize this. They usually think that it means no more problems, I won't get cancer, I can have a nice, my economics will improve, and all my mental disturbance will go away, and so on and so forth. Pure devotional service, yes, because you won't identify with those things. But in mixed devotional service, there's sometimes still some, because of our identification, our attachment, there's still some disturbance of mind and body and so on. But nonetheless, it is ultimately beneficial and helpful and bring us to this point of surrender, prabhati. This is the point, to come to this point of submission or surrender to the will of the Lord, to be completely absorbed and totally faithful in Krishna's name, service, and so on. In complete faith. Yasya devi para bhakti yatari vititaguru. I mean, implicit faith in Guru and instruction and Krishna. And then all perfection, one attained perfection. This is the real perfection. So the gopis are teaching us here, okay, disturbance, well, what's the point? Well, the spiritual world, they're also disturbed. In the material world, they're also disturbed. But the difference is this disturbance, this word is mentioned here, where is that? Viklava. There's a viklava. Which line is that in? Second line. Krishna Vishatna. Absorption in thought of Krishna, consisting of mental agitation. This is, mental speculation or mental agitation, whatever it is, in relationship with Krishna is not mundane. So this is the example given by the gopis here. Nothing unusual to be, you can say, agitated, but the agitation should be in relationship with Krishna. Everything has to be in relationship with Krishna. The Prabhupada said even in our own Krishna consciousness movement, sometimes there are differences of opinion, sometimes disagreement. But, because sometimes we have to deal with that in a kind of realistic way. But at the same time, Prabhupada said, even though there may be differences of opinion, both the opinions are to serve Krishna. So it is not a bad thing. But we have to be a little bit mature not to make that a cause of, offense, etc. To how to accommodate the varieties of ways of serving Krishna and appreciating the intent rather than the effect. We're always looking on the external platform, upon the effect. But devotees look deeper down, they see the attitude, they see the cause behind it. Just like sometimes Prabhupada will become angry, isn't it? I mean, as far as the ordinary people are concerned, they say, well, what type of sadhu is this? He's shouting, he's getting angry. One time in Amsterdam, we were reading that yesterday in Divijay's house. And Prabhupada was in Amsterdam and he was installing the deities of Jagannath Baladev Sabada. Not much was mentioned in the Lilamrita, but there was a big, big event and the terrible arrangements were made for the installation of Jagannath. I hope that Nityananda makes good arrangements on Monday. installing, not exactly a big installation, but he's in one sense installing Jagannath in his house on Monday. So in the public temple, Prabhupada was very concerned that these things were done, at least up to a certain standard. And nothing was ready. Nothing. No garlands, no flowers, no fruits. Nothing was ready. Prabhupada came down and nothing was ready at all. The altar wasn't ready. Nothing. Nothing was ready. Even proper dresses. Nothing was ready. Nobody really had a clue. They just kind of left it up to somebody else. No organization, practically. And one of the times, Prabhupada said, "Where is the fruit? Bring the fruit." As the devotees didn't quite catch on what exactly they were meant to do with the fruit. So they went to the kitchen and they brought the fruit. But they didn't know what Prabhupada meant and they never asked. So they brought some bowls of fruit salad in cream, creamy fruit salad. And they brought that to place around the yajna. And Prabhupada got angry. He was already angry with the pathetic arrangements. And he got very angry. Very angry. And this is all on television. On Dutch TV. I don't know what the people thought. But it was on Dutch TV. But there was one hippie boy behind Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. And he was probably intoxicated. And he said, "Why are you getting angry? Why don't you chant Hare Krishna?" And Prabhupada started chanting Hare Krishna. Not necessarily because of the boy, but he did anyway. But the boy couldn't understand that what the reason for Prabhupada's anger was. It wasn't because, you know, you were embarrassing me or, you know, you're disturbing me or something like that. It was because it wasn't pleasing to Krishna. The devotee gets angry. Arjuna got angry on the battlefield, not because he wanted to, because Krishna wanted him to. Krishna wanted him to fight. He didn't want to fight. The devotee, you know, so therefore the devotee is not controlled by anger, he's controlled by Krishna. The devotee is not controlled by mental agitation, he's controlled by Krishna. This mental agitation is a result of their absorption in Krishna, not the other way around. And when one becomes completely absorbed in how to spread Krishna consciousness, there's another kind of anxiety. Prabhupada said, "We're not here for shanti one time. We're not here just to sit like some kind of peaceful meditators. No, this is in a battlefield, you don't expect too much peace in a battlefield. You don't go on the battlefield if you want to meditate usually, or if you want a peaceful lifestyle." So in a sense, it's like the material world is a battlefield. And spreading Krishna consciousness is a little like a battlefield sometimes. It's tough. Our mind is like a battlefield. We just have to try to make Krishna the center of it. And we learn that will of Krishna by hearing from, as Uddhava did, the gopis are like the gurus. They were like gurus of Uddhava, teaching him this higher level of Krishna consciousness. And on our level, we're not on such an advanced level, but on our level, the spiritual master teaches us how to agitate our minds in such a way that we can serve Krishna instead of being agitated simply for being in this world. He teaches how to channel that and how to spread Krishna consciousness. We should rack our brains, Prabhupada said one time, how to spread Krishna consciousness. In fact, in the Nectar of Instruction, this is Prabhupada's definition of an Uttama Adhikari. One who is always thinking how to spread Krishna consciousness. This is the Uttama Adhikari. Not some people think it's somebody who has different definitions are there, but this was Prabhupada's definition. One who is always, in a sense, agitating his mind how to spread Krishna consciousness. This is our level of following in this mood of the gopis. And in that way, this is the best way. One devotee sent me a quote, I can't remember what it was word for word, please. It was a quote of Srila Prabhupada and it said something like, "The best way to overcome mental agitation is to agitate your mind to think how to spread Krishna consciousness." That was Prabhupada's, more or less what he said. Now this is an interesting topic. We all know what mental disturbances are like, pretty much. Unless you're so mentally disturbed, you don't know anything other than that, which is probably the case in most situations. But once we realize a little bit about it, then we want to change that. But most people just want to get rid of it, they're like Mayavadi process. But a devotee, he wants to engage his mind in thinking of Krishna. He wants to always absorb himself in Krishna, and certainly there will be some interference in the beginning stages from the material contacts. This is to help to bring us to that point of more surrender to Krishna and realizing I cannot do it on my own. I cannot control these wild senses on my own. Only Krishna, please have mercy on me. And one surrenders to Krishna in mood of surrender, and then Krishna helps, and he can remove that which is a disturbance to our spiritual progress, like that. Well, maybe there are some questions. Commentaries? Has anyone got a mentally disturbed? Is anyone mentally disturbed? Because this word is used in different contexts these days. And there's degrees, everyone is mentally disturbed. There are degrees of mental disturbance. Some are very mentally disturbed, and so much so they can't cope with life practically. But in general speaking, people are disturbed, and what are we going to do about it? Yes, Nitin.
Yesterday's lecture, you know, we were saying that by chanting Krishna's names, we will you know, all our disturbance, all our things will get cleaned, heart will get cleaned.
All your clothes will get cleaned. Devotees wear very clean clothes.
So, of course, and also by when we hear the lecture, that we hear that we should be serving Krishna. When we hear the lectures or we are in association sometimes, then for a few days, we try to follow, but suddenly, you know, we react against devotional service to satisfy self. How to stop this kind of...
How to become more consistent, may have a little faith. Sometimes our faith in the association of devotees is boosted. Our determination in the association of devotees is boosted. Our spirit, and so on, we become enlivened, enthusiastic sometimes in the association of devotees. And then without the association of devotees, then the little flame gets weak, or maybe becomes a little dull, a little lazy. The modes of nature get the better of us, basically. I thought you were going to ask something else for a minute. I was just going to... Yes, it's true. We're like blind faith or something. We want to see some results. Some kind of result there. Now, the result for a devotee should be seen. We may not be, say, consciously aware of that right now, although in the initial stages it's easy to see that when we first come we stop meat eating, if we are eating meat usually, and if we stop our intoxication, and then we stop our illicit sex life, and we stop gambling or whatever it is, different things, and maybe we reduce the number of chocolates we eat and things like that. A big topic of conversation these days is chocolates. Is the big, most popular topic in devotee kata right at the moment. Who do we offer our chocolates to? If they can't be offered to Krishna, then who do we offer them to? That was one question. offer them to your grandmother or what? Anyway, there are so many different things we stop when we first come to Krishna consciousness, so that's one thing. And then we find, as you say, that somehow or another there are lots of other things, maybe in our lack of resolve in following the strict process, or in controlling our minds, or even in external lapses where we become a little lapse in not bothering to offer our foodstuffs, not so strict about what we eat, when we get up, and our attitude, and so many things which we have to deal with. Krishna consciousness is a process of surrender. This is basically, whether it's slow, fast, or whatever it is, but this is a process of surrendering our independence for the pleasure of Krishna. So, one by one, we have to see these as challenges, not so much as being causes to say goodbye and throw in the towel, but challenges to go forward in our Krishna consciousness. So how do we learn to surrender? What is the process of surrender? Of course, we have to have the desire, but in the association of devotees, you've already given one practical understanding, is that when you're in the association of devotees and you sometimes hear some lecture about this or that, that you become a little determined, a little bit, yes, let's do it, or you discuss it amongst the devotees. So this is the purpose of sadhu sangha. This is the purpose of sadhu, especially in the grihastha ashram, where you know, you're living in different worlds, sometimes in work and sometimes at home with the family and sometimes here and there, that this in hearing regularly from sadhus is absolutely required in the grihastha ashram. This is, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said, is the only way that a grihastha can actually become successful is by regularly hearing from sadhus, Krishna Katha. When you're living in a temple, that should be a daily affair. It should be easier, as we may not take advantage of it even then. But that should be the purpose of our intelligence, which is there to control the mind, and to beat the mind into shape, to surrender to Krishna's will, is sharpened by hearing Shastra, by hearing from sadhus. That was how we hear them, read the books, attend the classes, to sharpen our intelligence, that we actually have the intelligence to control our minds. And in the beginning, it's a fact, we do need a lot of help, we need a lot of reminding, it takes a lot of effort to bring that about, to bring either a person to Krishna consciousness or to keep one in Krishna consciousness, to keep the mind in focus. It does take a lot of work. So what to do about how to keep that resolve and that stability? Well, we have to associate regularly. We have to hear regularly from Srila Prabhupada's books every day. We should study. Even if we're a householder, we should study every day. We should chant our 16 rounds, or whatever we're chanting. If we're not doing that, whatever we're doing. We should chant them with all of our heart. And we should pray. We should pray to Krishna for strength. And we don't have the strength. So we have to show we want to become sincere. We want to be a devotee with resolve. And at the same time, we have to realize, some realization has to be avokai-shriya-prasakta-nam-tayapurita-chetasam. We have to realize that material sense gratification causes distress. And sometimes we're a little slow learners. We take a long time to learn sometimes. And even though we hear it, we're just a little bit slow, we're a little bit, I would say, overly attached maybe. But gradually we'll start to realize that and in anything but Krishna consciousness is actually a cause of distress. And Krishna is trying to remove the causes, not the effects. So when we know the effects are causes of distress, but we don't realize the real point is the cause. When we realize that, then we may start having more resolve to avoid it. If you know something is going to cause you distress, you try to avoid it if you have any intelligence whatsoever. Therefore, Prabhupada one time said, I asked, what do we need, Prabhupada, to become Krishna conscious? Prabhupada asked this question. The devotee said, sincerity of purpose, Prabhupada said, yes, but not only sincerity, you have to be intelligent also. Otherwise, discrimination is required. Intelligence to know, that this is not going to make me happy. This is not going to help anybody. This is not going to, help induce my Krishna consciousness. when I did this, I became more inspired. It's like Harinam, you know, mostly when devotees go on Harinam Sangatan, they say, oh, that was wonderful. That was really wonderful. I wish I could do this all the time. The next time you ask them, oh no, Prabhu, I've got so many things to do, I can't go. This and that, your mind doesn't want to go. But it's a lack of intelligence. We don't learn from our experiences with Kali Yuga. A bit dull. So you know that when you come to the temple and you hear classes and you chant with devotees in kirtan and this and that, you find all your material temptations subsiding and your desires to serve Krishna with a sincere heart start to grow, and then you go out and you forget. So you have to have regularly watering that intelligence, watering that understanding regularly. Otherwise it's easy to get overwhelmed by the material pressures of from the past in our own minds and around us right now in the present. So the secret is association. You have to keep that association constantly, as much as we can, keep that association. How else? Any other comments on that? Prayer, don't deny prayer. We need help. We have to show that we want it, that we mean it. But Krishna is there, don't worry. His hand is there, and even if we do go up and down, which we naturally do, learning to walk, the child falls over regularly. But don't give up. Just we carry on, and with a little help we can learn to walk. We can learn to become a little bit more fixed. And in Grihastha life, working men and women, it is obviously understood that there's not so much, there's a lot more disturbance, not necessarily, but there appear to be a lot more disturbances or distractions from pure devotional service. Krishna understands that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes very nicely some of the aspects of Grihastha life, and one of them is that whatever spare time you have to spend a lot of time in study, work, or family, or whatever. Whatever time you have, use it for Krishna Katha. Don't waste that time. That is the sign of your determination. You're really seriously trying to become Krishna conscious, even though there may be disturbances. You get your mind back on. Even Arjuna was disturbed after Krishna's departing. When he remembered the instructions of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he said all the trash in his mind was dissipated, removed. So try to regularly hear Bhagavad Gita, regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam. This will help us to not be so carried away by the material energy. It's very important to hear this topic of knowledge given by Krishna. Anything else on that? Yes, ma'am. Absorption in Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna Avesh.
Consisting
of Atma, the word Atma. The word Atma, the translation in the word for word, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, is mentioned consisting of here a total absorption in Krishna. Well, of course, I don't know the exact Sanskrit answer to that, but we do know that one who is Krishna consciousness, in full Krishna consciousness, there is no difference between Vrindavan and the heart. There's no difference. The heart is completely, there's nothing else in the heart except for Krishna and Vrindavan. So Atma usually has several meanings. One of them is the soul, and it may also refer to different understandings of the self. Even determination or endeavor is another meaning of this word. But in this case it would seem that it's kind of like to understand that it's not like the soul is kind of thinking of Krishna in one sense, that the soul is nothing but absorbed consistently, completely, and there's no other constituents there. It's like the different levels of pure devotional service in prema bhakti. There's one, what is that verse? Krishna visheshatma. Total, absolutely absorbed in Krishna. This is the nature of pure devotional service. It's not that there's any competition, there's nothing else there whatsoever in the soul other than favorable thoughts towards Krishna. It's like a completely solid block of steel or something. It's impenetrable. It has nothing else. It's not consisting mostly. The soul is mostly thinking of Krishna, but sometimes thinking of something else, or thinking of Krishna is better than thinking of something else, or whatever it may be, or it's better than impersonal liberation. There's no question of even contemplating anything other than Krishna. So there's no difference in a sense in the spiritual world between your thoughts or your absorption and the very soul itself, or the life of the personality himself, the living entity. There's no difference. The living entity in transcendence consists only of loving, emotional, relationship, feelings, etc. in relationship with Krishna. There's nothing else. I don't know, as I say, there may be some other Sanskrit meaning exactly of that word, but in terms of its kind of practical understanding, I can't add anything to that other than it refers to the soul's non-difference in a sense to being completely absorbed in Krishna, consisting of nothing else other than absorption in Krishna. If you ask what is the soul, then this is what is the soul? Soul is, this is what the soul is, consisting of absolute thoughts of Krishna and nothing else. So in that sense, the soul is consisting of. I don't know what I can say more about that. Technical. There are many words which have many meanings in Sanskrit. Somebody here may be a Sanskrit scholar who can elucidate on it more. There's so many meanings of Sanskrit words according to the context. Okay. Let's get along, Srila Prabhupada.